This is a Kim Monson National News Briefing. On Little Bighorn's un-50th anniversary, a rancher sees the same fight over land. On the sesquicentennial of the battle, the Lukotu call the greasy grass, rancher Trent Loss told the Kim Monson Show that the same pattern is pressuring Western landowners today. Government taking land it once promised, now for wind, solar, and high-voltage transmission lines. 150 years after the Battle of the Little Bighorn, Trent Loss, a sixth-generation Nebraska rancher and broadcaster, told the Kim Monson Show that the fight which ended in that valley is the same one his neighbors are living through today. It's about land. It's about gold. It's about deals that are made that are now reneged on, Loss said. The battle was fought June 25, 1876, near the Little Bighorn River in Montana Territory, where Lieutenant Colonel George Armstrong Custer and his 7th Cavalry were overwhelmed by Lukota Sioux and Cheyenne warriors led by Sitting Bull and Crazy Horse. The Lukotu call it the Battle of the Greasy Grass, a name drawn from the lush valley grasslands that were often slick with dew. Loches said few Americans remember what set it in motion. The cause, he argued, was a guarantee broken for profit. The 1868 Treaty of Fort Laramie set the Black Hills and the surrounding territory apart for the absolute and undisturbed use and occupation of the Sioux. 6 years later, an army expedition confirmed gold in the Black Hills, prospectors poured in, and the federal government moved to take back the land it had pledged. The federal government, signed treaties with the Indian tribes, and then gold is discovered in the Black Hills, Loss said. Loss traced the same pattern through Colorado. 12 years before the Little Bighorn, on November 29, 1864, a peaceful Cheyenne and Arapaho camp led by Black Kettle was attacked at Sand Creek in southeastern Colorado Territory in what is now Kiowa County near Aedze. The Sand Creek Massacre was carried out by roughly 675 troops, chiefly the 3rd Colorado Cavalry, a volunteer regiment under Colonel John Chivington. An estimated 150 to 230 people were killed, more than half of them women, children, and the elderly, even as an American flag and a white flag flew over the camp. Loss sees the timing of Colorado's own statehood as part of the same arc. Congress had tried to admit Colorado before, but President Andrew Johnson vetoed the bids in 1866 and again in 1867, calling the territory's population, officially counted at fewer than 28,000, entirely too small either to assume the responsibilities or to enjoy the privileges of a state. Colorado was finally admitted to the Union on August 1, 1876, about 5 weeks after the Little Bighorn. For Loss, the through line to the present is direct. And this is 100% government manipulating people to take land, he said. Kim Monson tied it to the build-out reshaping rural Colorado. Well, we are seeing that, with the industrial complex going on with wind projects, solar projects, transmission projects. The examples are not hard to find. In Elbert County, Ixil Energy is using eminent domain to clear a route for its 550-mile Colorado Power Pathway, a $1.7 billion transmission line built to carry Eastern Plains wind and solar to the Front Range. The Colorado Sun reported that the utility needs rights of way across 48 properties and has filed for court-ordered entry on 13 where landowners refused. "We have property rights until we don't," rancher Don Gray told the Sun. The pressure reaches the same southeastern counties that hold the Sand Creek site. A proposed federal national interest electric transmission corridor would run through Baku, Prowers, and Kiowa counties, and residents there fear it amounts to federal eminent domain. The Colorado Sun reported that dozens gathered at the Prowers County Courthouse in February to oppose it. "The prosperity that hardworking people have spent their lives working for will be taken from them with the swipe of a pen," rancher Dallas May said. Loss says the pattern is bigger than any one project or state. "It's happening in every state in this nation. It's happening at the federal level," he said. "The technology has changed since 1876, and so have the names on the maps." The questions he hears underneath them, he said, are the same ones raised at the greasy grass. Who decides what happens to the land and what a promise about it is worth? And now, Kim's perspective. The incentives that drove the events of 1876 are still with us. When the government guarantees something and then finds gold or wind or a transmission corridor it wants more, the guarantee has a way of giving out. The families on the Eastern Plains who are told their land sits in the path of someone else's project are asking the same question the tribes asked at the Greasy Grass: who decides, and what is a promise worth? I am grateful to Trent Loss for marking this anniversary, because remembering how we got here is the first step toward choosing differently. For the full article with sources and links, visit kimmonson.com. This has been a Kim Monson National News Briefing.